I'm K2 Romeo India Whiskey. My name is Dick. At this time, we begin the as we do every Sunday night, starting at around 8 o'clock. And if there's enough enthusiasm, we last until 12 o'clock, 4 hours worth. The TechNet is the gathering of curious radio amateurs who want to know more about radio and wireless equipment and other pieces of science. There's a couple of interesting science subjects that will be discussed tonight. One of them is Roy on his list will have a picture of what the developing lightning path looks like, done with a very high-speed slow-motion camera. You can see the individual segments of the zigs and zags that are 120 feet long being developed by the cosmic rays coming along at those instants of time. So it's an exciting picture to watch, an exciting movie, so to speak, to watch. Let me drop. Another exciting thing that's happening is that starting on May 23rd, European Southern Observatory began a observation of the nearest star system to us, the Alpha Centauri and Proxima Centauri. It's a triple star system that has a couple of planets going around it, which are believed to be habitable. They're in the habitable zone of that star system. And so European Southern Observatory, with a very large telescope in Chile, has set up a coronagraph which will allow them to block out that sun, very bright image, and look for those planets going around to evaluate them. So wouldn't it be exciting to find that the nearest star system to us is the ones that also have a habitable planet nearby? It would be quite a coincidence. Alrighty, the TechNet is broken up into three sections, roughly. The first section, people sign in because they do have a question or a comment. They give us their call letters, their name, and the word yes, meaning you do have a question or a comment. Need not sign in because you're listening. We used to have a long list of people that were listening, and it doesn't serve any purpose, if you know what I mean. After 36 years, we believe somebody is listening to the TechNet, and this doesn't have to be proven anymore. So that's the first hour or so of the TechNet. The next section of the TechNet is run by Dr. Roy, AC2GS, and his science talk section, and also a mailbag section. We'll possibly have some puzzles. Be telling you about some exciting things happening in the world of science. The third section is run by Paul, WS2N, which is called the Space Report. And he tells us what that image on Mars is really doing. They found a Star Trek symbol on Mars, which you believe could be a coincidence. Most likely it's a coincidence, but we'll be hearing more about that. Let me drop. So, when it comes to the question and answer period, some people think that the stuff we discuss is a little bit too complicated. Some people think what we discuss is a repeat of what we discussed before. Well, each time we repeat it, it's done a little bit differently. And when it comes to things that are complicated, if you just sit and listen, some of it will start making sense, and you're allowed to sign in and ask questions. Don't worry about asking a question that you think is too simple. There is no such thing as a dumb question on the TechNet. A so-called dumb question represents a bigger difference between what the guy knows and what he would like to know. So if you think about it, that's the question most deserving of an answer. So don't worry about being bashful because you think your question is inappropriate for us. So do sign in with your name, call letters, if you think you have a question. So I'm going to take check-ins at this time. People with a question or an answer, question or comment to make, give me your call letters and name right now. K2RIW listening.
M2L deck, comment.
Casey, when I say Sam, question.
W2ASC, Tony, question.
W2RY, it's Yahweh, yes.
Okay, we got a good number of that time. N2EO, who didn't give us his name, but that's Rich. We also had a sign in from Sam. Can't even read my own writing. ASC. Tony, okay. Sam, Tony, and Joe. Anyone else to sign in? Give me your call letters and name right now.
WB2GXM, Rich, and yes.
Very fine, Rich. Okay, we got more than enough to get started. Okay, what's your comment, Rich? N2EO, T2IWTechNet.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Maybe you can help me, or somebody else also could, who's close to Andy, WHUCGL. After many weeks of being put off, he came over here yesterday. He brought a bird. He brought a bird two-line watt meter to calibrate the meter in my PowerStar antenna tuner. He didn't properly calibrate it when the first time. There's also a problem. The peak and average reading, the average reading works. The peak doesn't. So I told him what the problems are. He was about to get working here. He asked me to sign a piece of paper that he printed out on his computer stating that I will no longer discuss personal matters on the radio. I said to him, why do you want me to sign that? It's not up to you. So I refused to sign it. Anyway, he walked out abruptly. And I called him on the telephone, and he said he was going to block me. He did block me, in fact. I don't think that's the way to treat somebody. There were other problems in the past, but Dick, I'll tell you what the rest is, but maybe you or one of the other people can get through to Andy. Because there are a lot of things I could do to destroy him. I don't want to do it. I don't want it to go any further. Back to that.
Now, some of these items, I think, Rich, should be covered offline on telephones with Rich, the president of the club or whatever. Some of this material maybe is not appropriate for over the air.
I won't go any further, but I really think something has to be done. I'm left in the lurch. I already paid him for labor.
Okay. Thank you for those comments, Rich. We're going to go over to Sam next. KC1SAM. Go right ahead, Sam. K2RIWTechNet.
KC1SAM. I have an antenna question, theory question. I'm going to describe a setup and then make a change, and that's where my question comes in after the change is made. Let me just drop for a second so I have the full minute, about 3 minutes. I'm going to simplify it because I use 2 meters. I'm going to simplify it and say, visualize 3 2-meter dipoles in a line separated by, say, 5 feet. Perpendicular to them is a transmitter some miles away. And the center dipole receives that at an S9, let's say. The other two on each end may receive it at that or a little bit different strength, but here's my change. Take that center dipole and change it into a Yagi, say a 10-element Yagi, aiming at the transmitter. Now, the signal on that center antenna is going to go up drastically, maybe 20 dBs. My question is, what happens to the other dipoles? Where does the extra strength come from? That goes into that Yagi. Does it come from the surrounding space? In other words, will the signal on the two outside dipoles drop drastically because the center one is now pulling in the signal?
Now, first of all, the center dipole, when you make it into a Yagi, your signal is going to get stronger, but not 20 dB stronger. To get 20 dB out of a Yagi, it's been done, but that's a Yagi with a 25 elements and a whole lot of wavelengths long of the boom. So to get 6 or 10 extra dB out of the dipole, yes, out of the Yagi. Yes, the Yagi gets its extra signal because the combination of the driven element and the parasitic element gives it a larger capture area. So if your eyes operated at an RF frequency and you look down the throat of a dipole, you would see something that's 0.13 lambda squared. You'd see an oval in space around the dipole that's blackened, so to speak, and all the signal entering that black oval would end up on the dipole and go down the feed line. When you convert that into a Yagi, that oval becomes a lot bigger and starts becoming a circle. So yes, the effective capture area increases, and therefore the other dipoles alongside will see a weaker signal, because some of that signal's been extracted by the Yagi. And the presence of the dipoles alongside, depending how close they are, might change the tuning of the Yagi a little bit. But yes, I'm pretty sure because of the extra capture area, you would see a slight drop in signal on the two adjacent dipoles. That's a good guess as to what I think is going to happen there, Sam. KC1 SAM, K2LIW.
KC1 SAM picking it up. The 20 dB was just an arbitrary number I picked as I was talking about it. Okay, that was my question. I wonder where the extra signal strength came from, and it does take from the surrounding space. It really answered my question. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, I do wish that the articles describing how antennas work and how Yagis work would explain it from the point of view of effective capture area. Around every antenna, there is a chunk of space that's sucking up the signal, and depending on how close the antenna is to the ground, if some of that space intercepts the ground, it makes a difference. If it intercepts other metallic objects, if the object, the other metallic objects happen to be a resonant lint. But you take, for instance, if you set up a 80-meter dipole, let me pick a number, 50 feet off the ground, oriented so that the broadside is east and west. So it favors east and west. It's a north-south piece of wire. And you've got power lines across the street at exactly 50 feet of altitude, the same altitude. And you would think the power lines are going to give you a great big shadow. Well, the power lines are most likely not resonant at 80 meters. They've got a physical area of the wire itself of a couple of square feet. An 80-meter dipole at a reasonable altitude has an effective capture area of 8,500 square feet. The great big black oval around that dipole, which is probably, the dipole itself is 132 feet long. The black oval is probably 150 feet wide, probably 60 feet high. It's got 8,500 square feet. So the presence of that power line across the street is casting a shadow on your dipole of a couple of square feet. A couple of square feet of shadow out of 8,500 square feet is absolutely nothing. So if you could make the power lines across the street disappear, would it make a big difference on your 80-meter dipole signal? The answer is no, as long as that wire is not resonant. So effective capture area gives you a very different impression of what's going on compared to what your eye sees. Over to you for any further comments on all this, Sam. KC1, SAM, K2LIW in the TechNet.
KC1, SAM. No, I was interested in this space immediately surrounding the antenna. And it kind of what I thought. It has to come from somewhere. But I just wanted you to kind of confirm that. So I appreciate it. I appreciate it very much. Thank you, KC1SAM. I'll be standing by.
Yeah, that would be an interesting experiment to actually do, if you want to, Sam. A little bit elaborate, but it'll give you a little bit more feeling of what's going on with effective capture areas. And if you had a tower that's easy to climb, and therefore you could add antennas and subtract them, it would be easy. In your case, where your antennas are strung up in a tree, even your 2-meter antennas, that's a little bit more difficult, I understand. Okay, the next person on our list was Tony, W2ASC. My writing is a little prepared tonight. Over to you, Tony. K2LIW, my name is Dick.
Thank you, Dick. Yeah, it's W2ASC, you are correct. My question also involves an antenna and also confirming something that I believe I'm correct on. I recently was given a 500-foot roll of military surplus 14-gauge stranded copper wire that I was planning to use for ground radials on a ground-mounted vertical. My question is, this particular wire, I was able to pull up the spec sheet, obviously, because there's no spec, and it's got a very thick chlorinated polyethylene insulation, 57 mils thick. So the diameter of the wire is actually a quarter of an inch, which looks huge compared to the 14-gauge THHN, which I normally would use. I looked up the dielectric constant of chlorinated polyethylene, which is 5.5. I'm assuming that that's really not an issue, and it should still work perfectly fine for a ground radio, but I was just looking to see if I'm correct in that assumption.
Oh, yes. Very similar to what happens when a person builds, let's say, an 80-meter dipole out of a 14-gauge wire, which does or doesn't have a rubber covering on it. Does it make a difference? And the answer is almost no. That radio signal goes down through the insulation until it hits the wire, where it does its thing. The rubber insulation on the outside might change the electrical length of the wire by, let me put the number 1%, something kind of small. The actual signal being radiated by the dipole, if you could see that signal, the hot area around the dipole radio-wise, it would be a great big cucumber in space with the wire down the center of it, and it would be 8,500 square feet of effective capture area. And so you can see the rubber insulation is very small compared to that capture area. So the ground plane radials, I think, the nice thing about that rubber cover insulation is that the acid in the soil won't have a chance to eat into your wire. It'll be protected for a longer period of time. The actual length of the wire that'll give you an effective ground plane radial, I guess if you wanted to be exact on a quarter wave, would change very slightly. However, the ground plane radials really aren't resonant anymore, so their exact length is not so important. You know, all of that volumetric resistive material called earth that are nearby to those radials really kill the cue. There's not very much resonant effect left. So as I see it, you don't even have to worry about the length of them very much. So it should work like a charm, and that rubber insulation is going to protect them from the weather. W2ASC, K2IW, go ahead, Tony.
Thank you very much. You've confirmed my belief, and I'd just like to thank you in general. I've listened to the net for quite some time, never asked a question before, but it's really a great net. Thank you again, W2ASC.
Very fine, Tony. It's about time to sign in after all this listening. And, Roy and Paul, we got another happy customer, I think. Okay, Joe, W2RYY. You've now got a 3-minute timer, which is something you've been requesting for some time. And quite often you've got some questions that give us a tough time for a while. So go easy on us tonight. The B2RYY, K2RYY, be good, Joe.
Well, here's your question. If I give it to you in parts each week, eventually I can answer the entire question because it gets complicated. But anyway, in simplicity, at 50 megahertz in a mobile installation, if I put attenuations between the radio receiver and the antenna on the vehicle, does this change the signal-to-noise ratio that the receiver is receiving?
There's sort of a yes and a no to that. It depends. On 6 meters, on a good day, I'm not sure of the exact number, but I'm going to guess the noise of the ionosphere coming into your 6-meter antenna might be equivalent to a 7 dB noise figure, we'll say. So there's noise coming in, and the first couple of dB of attenuation you add is lowering the noise, lowering the signal you're listening to. The signal-to-noise ratio will stay the same if the noise figure of your receiver is very low compared to 7 dB of my example. But now let's go to the next step. What happens if you put a 10 dB attenuator between your antenna and your radio? You've cut down the signal by 10 dB. You would think you can cut down the signal, the noise, by 10 dB, but you can't. The noise is only 7 dB above KTB, so to speak. So you've now killed 10 dB of signal, but the noise getting your radio can only go down by about 7 dB, because that's all the excess noise is of the universe of coming into your radio. So in that case, the noise figure of your radio becomes the dominant noise, and your signal is getting weaker compared to that. So will the signal-to-noise ratio change? The answer is, for the first few dB, no. Later on, yes. Do you see the principle of what's going on there, Rich? I mean, Joe, very similar to what happens to a person who puts, say, a clip lead on the center conductor of his radio when he's listening to, let's say, 40 meters. The clip lead is a couple of feet long. He's listening to signals on 40 meters, and he compares the signal-to-noise ratio on the clip lead versus his full-size dipole outside. And the two sound almost the same. And the reason for that is the noise on 40 meters on a good day is probably 30 dB above KTB. Even though his clip lead might be an antenna that's 20 dB lower in gain, it's 20 dB less signal, 20 dB less noise out of 30. And so, although the S meter doesn't move as far, the signal sounds pretty good on receiving. It can't transmit back through that clip lead. So, how much noise is in the environment? This is very similar to what happens, let me drop. Very similar to what happens on sensitive photo detectors. If you had a state-of-the-art photo detector, they call that background limited performance. BLP, I think they call it background limited performance. If you've got a super sensitive photo detector, there's a certain amount of noise optically of the background and a certain amount of signal, and the two, the ratio stays the same at first as you change the efficiency of your photo detector. To B2RYY, T2RIW, great. What's your further questions on this one, Joe?
What I was trying to do is decrease the range of a mobile installation, transmit and receive. I'll tell you exactly what it is, and maybe you'll understand it further. I should have said, instead of saying signal to noise ratio, I should have just said background noise and signal comparatively. Well, that ratio stayed the same. What I did was, I did this to do a test to the radio equipment in my house and my mobile on 6 meters. I put the mobile into a 50 ohm load and had an RF tap ahead of the 50 ohm load, which had about 40 dB of a drop on 50 megahertz. And I connected that tap to my mobile antenna on my roof. So effectively, I shrunk the range of my 60 watt mobile comparatively compared to what it normally operates. So that was the optic, what I was trying to do. So there was a reason for doing this, because I was trying to do a test, a comparative test between my car and my house, going back and forth, and see which one heard each other better or worse. Did you absorb all that?
I heard the words, and I've got a partial picture. I think it's the antenna at the house who has the tap of a 40 dB decrease. And the, now how are you using that tap? You're receiving with that tap or transmitting with that tap? And is the tap on the antenna at the house or is the tap on the antenna on the car? You probably told me and I missed that one. Oh, dear Joe.
Okay, the RF tap is being used in the mobile to decrease the range of the mobile. I don't want to decrease the range of the house. I'm testing the house, so I want to leave that under normal operating conditions. It's operating into a folded monopole type of antenna. Range is running about the same comparative power, 50, maybe 60 watts or so on 52.525. I think it's using a frequency off that, so it would be, you know, jamming the channel. So, but that's really immaterial. But what I did was effectively shrink the range of my mobile as far as its range that used to be compared to its, you know, normal operation, which is about maybe 25 miles on 6 meters approximately. I can talk back to my house radio and hear the house come back. And the reason I'm doing this, or how I implemented this, is I have my 6 meter radio temporarily tied back to my UHF repeater. So now I have a way of actually hearing how the house hears me as I transmit from a specific location. And I can key up my UHF with a little bit of a tail and hear the base station at my house transmit back to me. So you get what I'm doing now. If you understand that, the next part of it is this. The house hears me a lot worse than I hear it transmitting back to me. And so it seems to me like I don't have that high of a noise figure noise level problem on the channel in the mobile, but I certainly seem to have it at the house. I'm sort of trying to figure out exactly why or what is causing it, where it may be coming from. Back to you. Do you understand the whole picture now, what I was trying to do?
Okay, the picture I've got now is that your mobile rig, the straight through line goes into a dummy load. The 40 dB tap is what's going into the transmitter. Are you transmitting from the mobile? You're using that tap in what way? Only on the receiver? I think that's right. I think you're receiving on the mobile on the 40 dB tap, but you're transmitting through the straight through into a dummy load. Now, tell me how you're transmitting from the mobile. What's the transmitter doing? What's the receiver doing from the mobile? Go ahead.
The mobile radio is connected to a RF tap in series, and then the output of that goes to a 50 ohm load laying on the car floor, 50 watt load or so. It gets a little warm after a while. So I'm actually transferring and receiving into that load, but 40 dB down from this tap is being hooked to my mag mount on 6 meters on the roof of the car. Now do you understand what I'm doing? I am effectively trying to shrink the range of my mobile so I can do an easier comparison of, at a distance from my house. One interesting thing it let me do, I found a nice big open parking lot and let me rotate the car slowly in a circle, and I actually could listen to the pattern of when I had the car aimed at my house or when I had the car 90 degrees to my house. I can actually hear the signal drop by quite a difference. So it made me think the mobile had like a cardioid type of pattern, or a figure eight type of pattern, like going along the length of the car because it's a wagon. So now you understand completely what I'm trying to do. I was effectively trying to transfer to the mobile and receive the mobile, effectively like I'm a long distance away by shrinking the signal level coming out of the mobile installation in both directions, transfer and receive off this magnet antenna.
Yeah, I think I'm getting the picture now. So your transceiver is connected to the straight through line to a dummy load. The 40 dB tap goes to the mobile antenna. So you're transmitting a signal back to the house, 40 dB weaker. And you're receiving a signal, 40 dB weaker. The house is using its normal antenna in the normal way. And you're transmitting something like 40 or 60 watts, whatever it was. So the signal going from the house to the mobile sounded pretty good. The weak signal from the mobile going back to the house didn't sound so good. Your antenna at the house is listening to the background noise of 6 meters, which has got a lot of man-made noise, fluorescent lighting, people's heater on their fish tank turning on and off, lights going on and off, all kinds of jazz, and atmospheric noise. So there's a lot of noise on 6 meters, and you're listening to a weak signal coming from an automobile. Whereas in the other direction, house to car, the noise that's normally there on the atmosphere, you're listening to it in the car 40 dB down, therefore you don't hear man-made noise, you don't hear background noise. All you've got is a little bit of noise compared to the noise figure of your receiver in the car. And it hears that signal above that much lower noise signal. So I can see how the signal to the car is going to sound a lot nicer than the signal being received at the house because of whether or not you can hear background noise of the environment. Does that make some sense, Joe? To B2LYY, B2LIW.
Okay, well, why would the background noise change in respect to the signal coming in? If I had the antenna not attenuated and I had so much noise coming in to that antenna plus the 6 meter signal, that's going to basically limit my receiving capability of that radio. Say the radio does typically 0.5 for 20. I'll just use that as an arbitrary figure. At 0.5 for 20 is minus 113 dBm, okay? Same thing with the house radio. Now, if I did the same test with this coupler at the house, and effectively what happens is I have to put enough signal in along for the drop-off across the coupler It effectively makes my on-channel sensitivity in my house about minus 98 dBm, which is horrible compared to the normal receiver sensitivity on the radio being hooked directly into the signal generator. If I turn the extender off of the radio, sensitivity goes down to like minus 92. So the extender on the radio buys me about approximately 6 dB of additional sensitivity or, performance. But minus 98 is horrible. Now, I was thinking I'd have something similar to that in the car. If I'm attenuating the signal coming in from the mag mount, wouldn't it attenuate the background noise as well as the desired signal coming in?
Absolutely. The 40 dB attenuator of your coupler in the car is you're attenuating noise by 40 dB, attenuating signal by 40 dB. At first, that sounds like it's a wash. Not at all. Your radio has a certain threshold. Oh, let me pick a number. Let's see now. 1 microvolt is minus 107, I think it is. Keep forgetting the number. Okay. The noise attenuated by 40 dB in the mobile brings the noise below threshold so that the dominant noise of your mobile radio is the noise figure of your receiver, which is broadband, nice clean noise. The noise of the environment is below threshold. The signal you're hearing from the house is stronger than that noise. It comes above threshold, and therefore you hear it. So the noise did get attenuated by 40 dB, but that brought it 30 dB below threshold to hearing that noise in the radio, in the mobile, because of the 40 dB attenuator. The only noise you hear left is the noise of the radio itself, not the environment. Environmental noise went below threshold. The signal didn't go below threshold. That's why it sounded still pretty good at the mobile. Over to you, Joe, K2LAW.
Okay, I'm still trying to understand what's changing, because I'm dropping the background noise and the signal on channel both together across that 40 dB tab. All right? If I take the thing out, then I'm actually going to drive 25 or 35 miles away into a nice open area and sort of trying to do the same thing. I was trying to avoid doing that kind of test by doing it more locally to my home location. That's all I was trying to achieve, and it seemed like what you're telling me is that doesn't work correctly.
Okay, I'm going to do it a different way. Assume you had a very ideal spectrum analyzer at the automobile connected to the straight-through line of the tap. Yes. In other words, the straight-through line going to the dummy load. You got an ideal spectrum analyzer with a good low-noise preamplifier in front of the spectrum analyzer. You got to do that because the spectrum analyzer starts off with a 30 dB noise figure. So you got a good preamp in front of the spectrum analyzer. You're looking at the mag mount antenna going into the 40 dB tap. You're looking on the screen of the spectrum analyzer. You see noise at the bottom of the spectrum analyzer. The noise that you see will be coming from your 30 dB preamplifier. You now connect and disconnect the antenna, the mag mount antenna, at the 40 dB tap. You're looking at the noise at the base of the screen. You're connecting and disconnecting the antenna at the 40 dB tap. You will see no change of the noise on the bottom of that spectrum analyzer. Do it when the signal is there. You'll see the signal pop up and down, but you'll see no difference in noise. Do the same experiment at your house. You've got the spectrum analyzer connected to your direct antenna, and the flat noise you see across the spectrum analyzer has got all kinds of spikes and noise from the environment. You're seeing environmental noise on the ideal spectrum analyzer at the house. So the noise of the environment is well above threshold at the house. The noise of the environment is well below threshold on the 40 dB tap at the car. Therefore, you're not seeing atmospheric noise. You're only seeing the signal. Although the noise got attenuated, the noise signal plus noise to noise ratio. If you could turn noise on and off, you can. In the automobile, you can turn the noise on and off of the environment by disconnecting and connecting the mag mount antenna to the 40 dB tap. You'll see no change on that screen. You're only seeing your own instrumentation noise because the noise of the environment is too weak compared to instrumentation noise. It's below threshold. Does that make a little more sense? To B2LYY, B2LIW.
Uh,
doesn't change. Well, the same thing with true in the receiver. Your noise floor of the receiver itself, with nothing coming into the antenna, would remain the same. Now, when you connect it to an outside antenna, you see a signal plus all the environmental noises that's in the background on top of that signal as well. That, what I was trying to do was reduce the range of my mobile so I wouldn't have to drive like 25 or 35 miles away. It seemed like I guess I just can't do that, can I?
Yes, you can. You did do it. By way of the tap, you lowered the sensitivity of your system by 40 dB. Is that true? Let me think. Yeah. The strength in microvolts of a signal that you can hear in the mobile changed by 40 dB when you added the 40 dB tap. The signal that you're transmitting back is 40 dB weaker. Are you trying to find out now what's happening to signal strength versus range, or signal-to-noise versus range? Signal-to-noise versus range is complicated by this noise threshold characteristic. Your basic radio has got a certain noise floor. I'm going to pick a number. Maybe it's minus 113 dBm. If you're adding noise of minus 113 dBm from the environment to the minus 113 dBm of your receiver, a pair of minus 113s of random noise, you've now doubled the total amount of noise, you'll see a 3 dB increase. But if the noise you're adding is minus 120, and the noise of your receiver is minus 113, you're adding noise at 7 dB weaker, you'll probably see no change at all, if you know what I mean. There is a threshold of noise, depending on the noise figure of your receiver in that configuration. Maybe this helps a little. Over to you, Joe, K2LIW.
Well, what it seemed like was when I drove in different areas, and I tried to do this out in the open without having cars getting near me or around me to cause a change to the signal path, it seemed like when I heard that the howlers were coming into me at about 20 decibels of quieting, and I transmitted back to the same fixed location, the howlers heard me a lot worse. Now, if I drove to an area closer to the house slightly, and the house heard me in about 20 decibels of quieting, I would hear the house radio coming back to me much, much better than 20 dB of quieting. That's the point I'm trying to make here. I'm trying to understand why it seemed to have such a crappy noise level at the house of it receding on 6 meters compared to my car.
What do you believe is the noise figure at the house, sir, Joe, of that receiver?
I don't know what the noise figure of the receiver is. The only thing I can tell you is I checked the on-channel sensitivity by putting a signal into the 40 dB tap, taking that 40 decibels into account, and I had to raise the signal level by so much when I connected between using a 50-ohm load on the end of that tap or my outside antenna. Okay? I can put the sense signal generator onto a certain level, 40 decibels above about minus 113 with a 50 ohm load on the end of that tap. I take the 50 ohm load off and I put the antenna in place of it. Now I'm going to bring up the signal generator to make the effective sensitivity of the radio in the house to about minus 98 dBm. It's terrible. That's a big change from minus 113.
Okay. It's making some sense. Let me explain this one to you. So at the house, you're plugging the signal generator into the 40 dB tap with a dummy load on the antenna. And you measure apparent receiver threshold. By the way, what was that threshold in microvolts, dBm, or whatever? When you account for the 40 dB attenuator, and assuming you're not getting a leakage signal from the signal generator directly into the receiver, which you've got to be careful with one of those, what do you believe was the threshold of the receiver when a dummy load is on the straight through line of the tap? Over to you, Joe.
Well, the threshold of the receiver, what it can hear, is a signal at 40 dB. When the signal generator is 40 dB higher than its level of minus 115 dBm, then we'll hear that effective same sensitivity. So I have to crank the generator up. I don't get my calculator to figure out what it is, do it by my head. 40 decibels higher than minus 115, approximately. And so that's my set point, okay? I got something like a guide to go by. That's a signal level across the tap with a 50 ohm load. When I connect the antenna to it, now I've got to raise the signal generator much higher, so it makes my effective on-channel sensitivity about minus 98 dBm. And the extender can't do anything about that. If I take the extender off, the sensitivity goes up to about minus 92. So the extender buys me about 6 channels, 60 decibels of signal improvement. That's all it buys you. But the difference between 115 and 98 is a big difference.
If I understand you correctly, you can measure threshold signal generator going to the 40 dB tap, and the tap device has a dummy load on it. When you substitute the dummy load with the real antenna, you had to crank the signal generator up by another, what was it, 15 dB or so? Is that what you're saying, Joe? Go ahead.
I do my head, 17 dB. 115 to 98, 17 decibels. So, yes, that's how much I had to crank the signal generator up to hear that 20 dB crying again come through the radio. So apparently, the signal coming into my antenna has all this other extra extraneous noise coming in on top of the signal I'm trying to receive, and it basically makes the receiver deaf as hell in the house installation compared to what I was, seeing performance-wise in the car.
That measurement suggests that the amount of extraneous noise of the environment coming into your antenna is 17 dB of noise figure, 17 dB above KTB, 17 dB above your threshold. That's a lot of noise. And you're now with an FM receiver, which has got a limiter discriminator. You're not looking at noise power directly. You're looking at, if I understand correctly, signal-to-noise ratio. Yeah, 20 dB of quieting. So the noise from your environment is probably loud enough to be capturing your limiter. And your signal has to be 17 dB louder to get above that. So, your environment's got 17 dB of excess noise, is what your measurement of the house is indicating. When you're in the automobile, and you're using that 40 dB attenuator to your mag mount, the 17 dB of excess noise is being attenuated by 40 dB. 17 from 40, you're 23 dB below threshold. The noise is being brought below threshold of your mobile receiver. Therefore, you don't see that noise in the mobile receiver. When you're using the 40 dB attenuator at the house, if you ever did the experiment in reverse, you've got the house transceiver going to the straight-through line of the attenuator. That's going into a dummy load. The antenna of the house goes into the 40 dB tap. If you did it that way, you would get the same result as you did the other way, if you know what I mean. You would be bringing the noise of the environment below threshold. So if you did the car experiment at the house, I think you would see identical results. Joe, go ahead.
Well, the only way you're going to solve this thing, I'm going to have to just bring this back into next week. What I'm going to have to do is take my generator outside, plug it into AC, because I can't run it in the car. I can't do this thing in the car. And hopefully I can do it with my car parked in front of my house. Now I may have the same high noise floor because of my just general areas. But I'll find that out once I do this test with my mobile installation. So I will do the same thing with the mobile and find out what my effective noise floor level is, how much it raises it in the mobile compared to the house. Then I can have a more meaningful discussion about it next week. Because apparently from what you're telling me is what I'm doing is not working correctly.
I think what you're doing is doing something, and the results you're getting, in my opinion, is very predictable. Once you understand the concept of noise threshold of the receiver. When the external noise is coming straight into the antenna, house or mobile, doesn't matter, quite possibly that noise, with all the gain in the front end of your receiver, is coming up to the limiting level of your limiter discriminator. And you're limiting on external noise. When you add the 40 dB of attenuation, the external noise doesn't do that anymore. therefore the signal will sound cleaner, so to speak, with a 40 dB attenuator, as opposed to a 40 dB weaker signal coming from the signal from the transmitter going into the same receiver, going into no attenuation to the receiver. Seem to be having trouble understanding that the power of the noise can go below the threshold of the receiver when there's a 40 dB attenuator there. The signal's being attenuated by 40 dB, yes. The noise is being attenuated by 40 dB, yes. But the noise after the attenuator is, let me pick a number, 23 dB below the threshold of the receiver. The receiver no longer sees the attenuated noise of the environment. There's nothing wrong here. It's doing something that's very predictable once you understand the concept. To B2LYY, K2LIW.
W2LYY. Okay, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to check my mobile installation at my house, because I know I'm not going to go bring my signal generator out in the middle of the field to try to find electric to run it. It can't run off 12 volts off the vehicle. I can't do that. I'm going to have to measure the effective sensitivity of my mobile installation, and then take this attenuator out and actually take a drive 25 or 35 miles away and find some place where the house hears me, and I can hear the house, and then I can judge by signal level comparisons if things happen or not. Now, okay, once, say I go out in the distance and I find a situation like I can hear the house radio much better than they can hear me, then what would you say? I have a high noise level at my house? I already know that.
At the house, when you connected the antenna to the system instead of the dummy load, your sensitivity measured at the 40 dB tap degraded by 17 dB. If you did the exact same experiment at the automobile, you're going to come close to 17 dB of change in sensitivity again, assuming the mobile has the same noise figure as the house. When you do that experiment at the mobile, dummy load versus antenna, you're going to see close to 17 dB of change in sensitivity again, Joe. Over to you, K2LIW.
And what if I don't?
Maybe you're going to see a 15 dB difference instead of 17, because the mobile antenna is lower to the ground, and the higher antenna at the house sees more of the man-made noise and whatever. So you're going to get a somewhat similar result when you do it, when you measure the change in sensitivity of dummy load versus mag-mount antenna. I think you're going to see a 15 dB change. A couple of the dB of noise of the environment seen by the house antenna is not going to be seen by the mag-mount, because the mag-mount is lower to the ground. And it's got some local, the house nearby and the trees nearby and whatever are a local attenuator. So the environment is giving you a little bit of attenuation down low of environmental noise. But you're still going to see a degradation, a change in sensitivity, dummy load versus antenna, in my opinion. Over to you, Joe, K2LIW.
Okay, well, I'll try the experiment during the week, both ways, and I'll come back with some different results next week. When the physics part of the section of this tech then opens up, I have a physics question. I'll wait a long time for that.
If I understand you correctly, Joe, the thing that's making you perplexed is that dummy load versus antenna at the house change sensitivity by 17 dB. You're amazed by that 17 dB change in sensitivity? Is that where this all started? Back to you, Joe.
No, I'm not amazed by it, because I told you I've done this already. I did the same test with the same kind of radio, mobile radio, on 29 megahertz. And it was even worse. At 29 megahertz is something like between dummy load and antenna input. It changed by 24 decibels, at least 24 decibels.
That's exactly right. 10 dB noise is 24 versus 17 is what, 7 dB. The 7 dB more noise power at that frequency versus 2 meters. That's exactly the way it should be. So there's nothing magic here, Joe. you're getting rather predictable results. One of the rough rules of thumb that's been used in the past is that at 200 megacycles, the noise power is a couple of dB above KGB. Noise power of the environment, of the ionosphere, goes up 6 dB every time you have the frequency. So by the time you get down to 10 meters, 20 meters, and whatever, the noise of the environment is huge. Connecting and disconnecting the antenna on your HF receiver is going to make the S-meter move quite a bit. The environment has quite a bit of noise, and it gets noisier as you get lower in frequency. So what you're measuring is good physics, and it's predictable. Over to you, Joe.
Well, yes, it is, and it's also made me always wonder why one manufacturer advertises on, like, an HF transceiver, I can hear down to, like, you know, half a microvolt, or my radio can hear down to, like, a quarter of a microvolt. At the end of the day, though, if that's your answer, antenna, I don't really think it makes much difference.
You're absolutely right. When connected directly to a signal generator, there's no environmental noise, and you'll measure a quarter of a microvolt on a good 2-meter radio. Connect that 2-meter radio to an outside antenna, looking at the horizon, so to speak, and now by way of a tap point, you remeasure the sensitivity and calculate what it really means after the attenuation. You won't get a quarter of a microvolt anymore. You probably get a microvolt, if you know what I mean. So the environment creates noise that hurts signal-to-noise ratio. That is a blip situation, background limited performance. The sensitivity in the real world is background limited. How much noise is the environment, the background, giving me? My signal has to climb above that noise before I hear it. Over to you, Joe, K2LIW.
You can go on the next guy, I'll just make one comment. I did do that with the same kind of radio on 2 meters. All these radios are, they're all Motorola radios. I'm not using them all on FM mode. I'm not using a HF transceiver or something like that. So they're all Motorola radios. And I did do the same kind of test on 146 megahertz, and that change was somewhere around, effectively, it degraded the signal about 3 or 4 dB up on 2 meters.
So, half microvolt of sensitivity became almost a microvolt of sensitivity. Is that what you saw?
Somewhere around that. That's about a 6 dB change, but I think it was a little less than that as far as the effect of sensitivity.
Yeah, what you're measuring, Joe, is good physics, and it's predictable once you understand the concept of the noise being below the threshold, the noise background being below the threshold of the receiver, if there's enough attenuation between that antenna and the receiver. Okay, we'll go on to the next person, which is, I think it's Rich. Give me B2GXM. Over to you, Rich, K2RIW.
K2RIW and the group, this is Rich, WB2GXM. I have a computer hard drive question. I have a nice 1 terabyte portable USB powered hard drive sitting here, which I used to use to back up files at the computer at work. And it was not plugged into the computer 4 years ago when that computer was hit by ransomware. Ever since that attack, I have not plugged this hard drive into anything. So my question is there anybody who can tell me a good opinion whether this, I can plug this hard drive into a modern computer with up-to-date virus software without damaging anything? WB2GXM.
Comment on that?
Go right ahead, Joe.
You may want to do that, but make that a D drive. If you plug it into another computer that has good current antivirus software, if you can plug that drive in as a D drive and then scan that drive, you're not giving the thing a chance to operate in Windows capacity as it would be as a C drive by itself. You may be able to scan it with antivirus software with another computer, scanning it as a D drive or some other drive, whatever you call it. Whatever it's still there, you may be able to find it and get rid of it before you try to put the, that drive back in a computer and try to make use of it. Does that make some sense?
You got it, Rich.
Thank you, Joe. I will plug it in. The computer already has a C drive, so that's fine. The hard drive would show up as a D drive or E drive or whatever, will the act of plugging it in cause problems? WBTGXM.
Zulu.
Joe first, and then we'll go over to Zulu.
I'm not certain about that. If the whatever you suspect that's on that drive that doesn't belong there is actually operating besides the windows itself being up, and I'm not sure of that answer or not. And that's what the next guy picking up is for the comments.
Bravo Zulu, you got it.
If this drive is not a C drive, in other words, doesn't contain the operating system, the only way it can cause virus harm is if there is a executable that can be run, in other words, a program that can be run on that drive without it having to be installed first. I forget the name of it, localization, not localization. There's some other name for it. But as long as you're not causing a program to run from that drive, there's no way you can get a virus affecting your C drive.
GXM, you got it.
Folks, I would hate to waste a perfectly good hard drive on this ransomware thing, so I will try. I have up-to-date virus software on the new computer at work, and it would be plugged in, and I can immediately scan it. So that would work out well. Thank you very much, everyone. K2RW, WB2GXM.
AC2GS.
AC2GS. I forgot. Just give us your name and then proceed with your comment.
Yeah, it's me, Roy. To Rich, I'm just curious. Is there important stuff on your hard drive? Because if things seriously important on the hard drive, by doing a very level format, you should wipe the whole thing away.
This is true. I don't remember if there's anything important on there. But if just plugging it in is not going to cause a problem, of course I could reformat it then.
Zulu.
Bravo Zulu, go ahead.
If you can't remember if there's anything important, well, there probably isn't anything important. And when you do format it, do a low-level format. Even though a low-level format isn't the panacea people think it is, in other words, completely wipes out anything that was on the drive, believe it or not, these data recovery companies can recover data from a low-level formatted drive, but it is better, quote-unquote better, to do a low-level format than a quick format. You know, it gives you a choice in Windows. Go ahead.
Very good. Thank you.
So come back next week and let us know how this all turned out, Rich, GXM. Okay. I think we've gone through all, everybody who signed in. I'm getting old-timer's disease. Didn't recognize Roy right away because of a dropout that I had as he was signing in. Roy's going to give us now the science talk and mailbag and some puzzles and all kinds of good stuff. Go right ahead, Roy. AC2GS, K2RW in the TechNet. And by the way, Roy, I think we don't have EchoLink tonight. Is that true?
Yes, unfortunately, the entire internet link to the repeaters are down, so Lou can't even get in to reboot them. IRLP is down, EchoLink is down.
And we're still getting a moderate number of people signing in. We're lucky. Back to you, Roy.
When in doubt, you go back to RF, where we started from. You know, we don't need no stinking internet, I guess, but it's always nice to have internet as well. Anyway, as always, I like to remind people, even though they don't take too much advantage of it, that if you have a topic or a question or a comment or want to dispute something, feel free. The email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. everything I talk about much. We'll have links to articles to expand upon that, the linking page, which will